Welcome to the Press Box, Ryan Thorburn, joined by Ken Woody. We're getting ready for Oregon at number 13 USC for the Pac-12 championship. It's hard to replay everything that's happened since the last time we did a podcast. Let's just start with the last week. Oregon was supposed to play rival Washington for the North Division at Autzen Stadium last Saturday. That game was canceled due to a massive COVID problem within the Huskies program. So the Pac-12, of course, in their wisdom, went ahead and announced it'll be Washington USC for the Pac-12 title. Yay. Then on Monday, it was determined that the Huskies cannot play in the Pac-12 championship. They don't have any offensive linemen. Their entire team was still in quarantine. So the also announced Oregon-Colorado game is off, and now Oregon is playing USC. On top of all that, Mario Cristobal and his staff have signed a top five recruiting class on Wednesday. And on Thursday, Mario Cristobal received a six-year, $27.3 million contract. That's just the base salary part of it, for his efforts over the last couple of years. So quite a week in Oregon football. Woody, where do you want to start?
Well, I would say this, that Mario has learned his lesson about Larry Scott, the commissioner. So when he heard that the Huskies were going to play SC and the Ducks Colorado, his staff worked 24 hours evidently on a game plan for Colorado, and knowing that Corona had been a problem for Washington and might still be, they started working on a Washington game plan or a USC game plan the next day. So they were fairly consistent in their normal routine getting prepared. I was watching a USC podcast, their defensive coordinator, and he was talking about how they were looking at films of Oregon, and they started saying, well, we're going to do this and this, and they realized that's what they were going to do against Washington and not Oregon. So they had a little bit of transition issues making the change from the Huskies to the Ducks. This Corona thing, and Colorado will stay in Los Angeles until the Duck and USC game starts, because they're there in case either one, USC or Oregon, can't play. Then they will step in and play. And USC playing Colorado would not be necessarily a bad matchup. They're two of the better teams in the league. So, but hopefully things will happen with the Ducks. I do want to just bring up something. I was talking to a friend of mine at Washington State, and I don't know if you're aware of this, but you know the Washington State and Cal game got called off last Saturday, and it got called off 90 minutes before the game was to start. California was already up in Pullman. They were getting ready to go out on the field and warm up, and they found out no game. And so, what a bad thing for the kids who wanted to play the game. And of course, the joke's on Cal, because, you know, going to Pullman in the winter is not a joyride to begin with, but to go for no reason, put on your football gear and then take it off and go home, that's just really a bad deal. I feel sorry for these guys.
Yeah, Oregon was, I think it was Alex Forsyth was saying the other night, yes, it's been a roller coaster, you know, the whole year has, but Oregon was pretty fortunate. Their first five games went off unscathed. The Oregon program itself has not had to cancel yet. And then, you know, unfortunately, the Huskies couldn't come finish the six-game regular season. But how do you feel about Oregon being in this game? Is it, I guess, they're just as deserving as a Washington team that would have been 3-1 but would not have played a road game, would not have played the Apple Cup, would not have played Oregon? I mean, the North Division just really doesn't have an ideal team for this.
Well, right. The whole Pac-12 is not very fair this year. Some teams have had it worse. The Huskies had it best, you know, four home games, obviously that's a good thing for them. I have two feelings. One, I'm glad for the Ducks that they get a chance to defend their championship. I think that's a big thing to them, and I wish them well. Now, on the other hand, I have a certain amount of trepidation because if I was a team right now, I wouldn't want to be playing USC. As a matter of fact, I'm not sure playing Washington was a good deal either. So, you know, Oregon's taken a couple steps back after winning their first three games. They've the one thing we can say is the last game they tackled better. But other than that, the parts of their game that were pretty good through the UCLA game were not very good against Oregon State and Cal. And so you'd like to have a little more momentum, more momentum than that going into playing against USC.
Yeah, I mean, this is the game back in August that we thought would happen. USC was picked to win the South, Oregon to win the North. Oregon was the favorite to repeat as Pac-12 champions. So they get here in a strange way, but they're here. You mentioned USC, you know, just covering a lot of Oregon games. I haven't watched them a ton, but from what I've seen, Keaton Slovis is a spectacular sophomore quarterback. I know that he had four touchdown passes in the first quarter against Washington State. Last week, he had one in the last few seconds to beat UCLA. I believe he's 12-1 against Pac-12 teams as a starter. Of course, that loss was Oregon's romp last year at the LA Coliseum. Does Oregon's secondary and just their defense at large, with, you know, some extra time to prepare, kind of lick their wounds, work on tackling, what can they hold USC to give the offense a chance?
See, I think Oregon's the defensive, and you talk about the secondary, their biggest disadvantage is they're not as fast as the guys they're going to try to cover. I mean, Mikhail Wright is probably the only guy who's in the same category as their top three, actually top four receivers. And you talk about the USC quarterback, he is engineered come from behind wins in three games in the last 15 or 20 seconds. So, you know, he's a good under pressure. He throws a really catchable ball. I really like the way he throws, and he's got some fast guys who make a lot of tough catches. If I were a defensive secondary coach, especially one who does not have a strong pass rush, I would be quaking. I might be hoping for an ice storm or something.
Yeah, I mean, they've had games where Amon St. Brown has dominated. They've had, you know, Jake London was terrific in the Arizona State game. Tyler Vons is one of the best receivers in the country. It's kind of like receiver U right now. You know, Micah Pittman's brother was there last year. Now he's with the Colts doing a good job. It's really impressive. Is it, you know, they always attract talent, but is it this air raid system finally getting it out of them, or what do you see from their offensive scheme?
Well, I think that their offensive coordinator, who learned at the foot of Mike Leach, is really the best air raid guy I've seen, because he knows how to mix it up. He's not the one thing about the Cougars under Leach is they didn't have a lot of different formation packages. USC does, and we should. Their fourth receiver is awesome too. And the tight end number, I don't know his name right now, but number 15, he was a force. So and they're not all wide receivers. You know, he's got a tight end, and they use their back. They're a very comprehensive throwing team. And I think if you wanted to know how good an air raid offense could be, you'd look at USC's right now. And last week is the first week they had a running back get over 100 yards running. But it looked like they decided they would run a little bit more than they normally do, because they had not got over 100 yards in any game up until the UCLA game. So they look pretty good. And their main running back was carrying guys on his back into the end zone. So they're a formidable offense right now.
Yeah, of course, Clay Helton was on the hot seat, you know, it seems like every year. But a couple of years ago, he made a bold move and hired Cliff Kingsbury to to bring in an exciting offense. Of course, Kingsbury was there for a cup of coffee, maybe a donut, and then, I guess he doesn't eat donuts. He's in good shape, but he wasn't there long and took the Arizona Cardinals job, obviously, and they replaced him with Graham Harrell, another Texas Tech quarterback. That's the offensive coordinator you're talking about. He's done a great job, and from what I've heard about the air raid is it's that second year in it when quarterbacks kind of take off, and we've seen that from Slovis, although he had a great freshman year. Speaking of coaching changes, this year Helton got rid of Clancy Pendergast, who seemed to be kind of outdated as far as maybe recruiting and his scheme or whatever. It wasn't working, and he brings in Todd Orlando, who was, I think, dismissed from Texas or whatever happened there. But Todd Orlando is a guy who worked for Mario Cristobal at Florida International, and he went to the same high school as Joe Moorhead and coached with him in the MAC. So these coaches know each other. It's going to be a good chess match there. What do you think about Oregon's offense with extra time to prepare and rest up C.J. Verdell against Todd Orlando?
Well, I think absolutely they need to rush for over 150 yards, and they need to throw for their average about 230. So, and take time doing it. I think Oregon to win will need to score at least 35 points, maybe 42, and play a turnover free game. Right now, USC is +7 turnovers. Oregon is -7. So that's 14 turnover difference between the two. And Oregon just cannot afford to let a team as talented as USC turn the ball over to them as they have against California and Oregon State too. So no turnovers, bro.
What do you think about Tyler Shough this year? I mean, they had, each team has had a game canceled, and Slovis has slightly better stats in terms of passing and obviously touchdown passes a little bit better. But Tyler still leads the Pac-12 in total yardage, and he hasn't had his full complement of receivers in any one game, I don't think. They're expecting all of their receivers to be ready to go. They're expecting C.J. Verdell to be feeling healthier after suffering a hand injury against Oregon State, and, more time for the offensive line to practice together. What do you think about Tyler's year? I mean, it's easy to criticize quarterbacks, but this is his first year as the starter.
I wouldn't criticize him too much. I thought going into the season, after seeing him last year in mop-up duty against Nevada, and he threw a touchdown pass against USC down in L.A., I thought Shuck was better as a sophomore than Herbert was, and I still think the same thing. Unfortunately, as the season progressed, more and more was put on his shoulder in terms of that he had to generate a certain level of performance that, his pass protection's generally been okay, maybe pretty good for a totally new offensive line that hasn't played together. But I think he's played well, and he's run the RPOs, the run-pass option offense, very well. I think the Ducks, I just look at somebody like D.J. Johnson, excuse me, the tight end, and you wonder, with as effective as he's been as a receiver and as a blocker, why we don't see him more. And we see Camp Moyer a lot. It's just that I think they could do a little bit more with their tight end. And I think I hate it when they get into the pistol formation. I'd really like to sit down with Moorhead someday and just say, what do you like about it? And what are defenses doing to you that to disrupt it? What I see when there's disruption on the pistol is that there's somebody on the edge, perhaps inside the tackle guard, or outside the tackle, who's coming down hard, and they're going for a spot right about where the quarterback is lining up, knowing that they're going to blow up any kind of read that they might do on an option thing. And you see on short yardage, I just hate it The guy trying to get the 1 or 2 yards for a first down is 8 yards deep in the backfield. And how many times have we seen Verdell, maybe even Dye as well, get tackled 2 yards behind the line of scrimmage on a 4th-and-1 play? It's just I don't really like the pistol, and but I'm not privy to all the things that go into their decision to do it. And maybe there's some things about it that I haven't noticed and don't see. But right now, I don't like the pistol.
Well, I think Moorhead didn't know anything about the pistol, but one of the architects, the inventors of it, Jim Mastro, is Oregon's running backs coach, and I think they got together over the summer, and it piqued Moorhead's curiosity, and I think he did like it on film, or the concept of it, or how it was run back in the day in Nevada. But it hasn't been a great thing at Oregon lately. I mean, yes, Oregon was a good running team last year. They're a pretty good running team this year. But like you said, it's not consistent. You know, some games they gash people, some games they can't get anything going. This is a game where they're going to have to gash USC a little bit and keep the ball. And to your point about, you know, the tight ends blocking, they're going to have to do a good job because USC does have good edge rushers. Now, USC hasn't been great at tackling in space. So, you know, maybe the prediction that we all think that it's going to be high scoring will prove to be true. What do you think about Devin Williams as the X factor? He was a USC receiver in this long line of great receivers, transfers to Oregon, and there were a couple games there when he was looking like the man, and, you know, he missed the previous game with an injury, but I think he could be the X factor in this game.
Well, he could. Watching him play, immensely talented, probably more all-round talent as a wide receiver, speed guy, making the great catch, the acrobatic catch, the best receiver that Oregon has had in the last several years. However, his greatest enemy is himself. He has a tendency to pop off, run his mouth. He's there pushing guys and separating guys. And I just think I think it'll be a miracle if he can get through this game without a unsportsmanlike conduct penalty. And I would say this about USC. Watching them in the first half against Washington State, it was as if they all decided we're going to do everything in our power to intimidate and push the Cougars around, which they did. Cougars were shell-shocked, 4 touchdowns in the first quarter. But in the second half, Washington State said, you know, we've had enough of this. Maybe they got a little pep talk from their head coach, but they came out and played SC tough in the second half. Now, you can run on USC. They give up an average of 157 yards a game rushing, and, you know, that's a good place to start. So they're not an airtight defense themselves, but they've had the luxury of having an offense that can score quickly and get behind by 2.5 touchdowns and still come back and win the game in the fourth quarter, as they did against UCLA. Now, I will say this. I would think that Helton is making fewer offensive decisions this year, and they're letting Graham make those decisions. And the more he got involved with their offense over the past couple of years, the worse things got for USC. So maybe he decided I'm just really impressed with what they're doing. And to speak to about Moorhead, this is where not having spring ball kills you. He's a brand new coach, bringing in some new ideas, a new system. He gets four days of practice. And so he doesn't get to install that in the manner that you would and get the repetition so you can see what you're doing well and what maybe you ought to toss out. And the same thing goes for the pistol. If he had a full spring ball with the pistol, it might be a lot better right now or be eliminated. So I just see so many instances where missing spring football ways that they can hurt your team and your coaching staff just in the repetitions and the discipline that you're able to instill in your team by game time.
What I think's fun about this game, and to your point about, you know, the penalties, there was a lot of penalties last year. I wouldn't be surprised if there's some penalties this year. These two teams are going to talk. A lot of the Ducks are from Los Angeles. Oregon's done a great job of getting some big-time players out of Los Angeles, none bigger than Kayvon Thibodeau. And if you recall last year, you know, it was such an important game for Mario because they were putting together that was a November game. They were putting together last year's recruiting class, which was a top 10, top 5-ish class. Now they've done it again this year. These two teams are going to be going at it year after year if you base it on recruiting rankings, which is usually how the college football playoff goes. But Oregon had the last laugh last year. They had a special teams kickoff for touchdown by Mikhail Wright. They had a defensive touchdown, I believe, by Brady Breeze. Justin Herbert had his passing game going. And then even Tyler Shuck came in garbage time and threw a touchdown to Micah Pittman. That was quite a statement made by Oregon last year. Who do you think is more motivated by that?
Well, I think SC. First of all, Oregon came into the Coliseum in front of their fans, their families, and defiled them. And the Oregon guys didn't just walk off the field. They hung around. And, you know, they've got lots of family up there, too. But you can just imagine the interchanges that went on that we were not privy to with TV. Now, watching the end of the UCLA-SC game last week, those SC guys, when the final gun came over, they ran across the field. And that may they weren't there to get the trophy, which is a bell that was painted red and gold. They came over to start giving the business, so to speak, to the UCLA players. It was really very unsportsmanlike. And, you know, Clay Helton's a born-again Christian, but I didn't see a team coached by a born-again Christian when the final gun there. So, you know, I'd like to think that all that's preventable. But there's a lot of talking, and the sport culture today is in your face, and beating you, getting more points than the other team isn't just all of it. Making the opponent have to hear from you about it is a big part of the game too. And so I just worry that there's a 15-yard penalty somewhere in the game that, you know, keeps a drive going for the other team or hinders a drive, you know, takes back a touchdown or a first down when you really need it. So I'm a little gun shy about what could happen.
Who do you think the pressure's on? On one hand, USC's having this undefeated season. They, you know, look like they're on their way back. I wouldn't say they're back, but they've had a nice season. They're supposed to win this game. They're a slight favorite. On the other hand, you have Oregon. They were supposed to win this game in August, and they're the reigning champion. So, you know, who's the pressure on? Are both teams going to come out loose and play, you know, their best game?
I think SC will come out, and the same thing against Washington State is they'll be hostile and at a high rate of passion. I will say this, that their first quarter against the Cougars was the most together, intense bit of passion that I've seen a USC team have in a long time. In the past, you know, you get shots of the sideline and players would be arguing with each other, and you could just see that it was not a good vibe. But the vibe that the SC had was very, very positive for them. And it just overwhelmed the Cougars. So I think the pressure's on Oregon, and mostly because that they're going to have to play their best game of the year to compete, to be able to do this. And you know, USC's getting better every game. I've seen all their games, and they've come a long way. And a lot of their enthusiasm is different and at a higher level now than it was two games ago. So I think they got a lot of confidence. I think the pressure's on Oregon myself.
At the same time, I remember a year ago, everyone was saying that Utah's defense was the best in the country, that Utah had a pretty good chance of getting into the playoff if they took care of business against Oregon. And Oregon took it to Utah last year. You think this is a different scenario?
It, very much so. My prediction last year is Oregon would win if Herbert ran the option, which he did, which had a big difference. And that long touchdown run that Verdell had was set up by guys running to stop Herbert on what they thought might be an option. But the difference was last year the Ducks had Dye and they had Breeze, they had Holland, they had Graham, and they had Sewell on offense. Those guys, I mean, that's a lot of star power. And it's not to say that the guys attempting to step in their shoes are, you know, are slouches, but, you know, Breeze was in his third year. He looked fairly average until Pickett had to sit because of a targeting, and he got his chance to play. And all of a sudden, everyone's going, wow, what a good football player. If the Ducks have any of those kind of guys this week, they need to show up. I think that would be helpful. But I think the Ducks have just lost too many guys, especially on defense, to at least in my mind, make me feel comfortable that they can stand up to the offense.
So you think Trojans by what, 10, 14? What are you, 20? What are you talking about?
21.
21, wow.
More.
You know, Vegas only has them as what, like a 3-point favorite? Crazy things are happening in 2020. I would lean towards USC, but I just feel like Oregon's players they're tired of hearing about Oregon State and Cal, and they really want to play Washington. I think they're itching to play this game. I feel like they don't really have much to lose, a lot to gain. You know, it's hard to know their mentality over Zoom, but they seem pretty hell-bent on bouncing back and winning another Battle of L.A. because they feel like that's their home soil. So, you know, I think USC wins a good one, like 41 to 38, something like that.
Yeah, you bring up a good point, though. And actually, I would say for the thousands of people that are listening to this podcast, should be aware of that you are able to talk to the players or at least hear what they're thinking more easily than I. And one thing I found at Washington State, whenever we'd go down to the Bay Area, we had a lot of players from the Bay Area. They would play their best game of the year in front of their family and friends. So there is that factor for the Ducks that, you know, the SC, just the, you know, whoever's there. Of course, the Pac-12 in its wisdom doesn't allow any spectators. So at least, you know, the home turf means something special to the guys from LA or California. And the Ducks have 41 out of 111 who are from California. So, you know, that's significant. And I hope you're right. I respect your, I've never seen you be too far off in your prediction. And I hope if any players heard me, they'd go, oh, we'll show that SOB. And then they go out and win.
Well, Isaac Slade, you know, said that Kayvon has really been getting after guys in practice. I'm sure that's setting the tone for the LA guys. And Isaac was asked, you know, do you guys feel like you're even worthy of this game the way you backed in? And he said, you'll see on Friday. So I guess we will see on Friday. So it's been a fun, weird season, Ken. We will maybe talk about it, wrap it up after this game. But thanks for tuning in, everybody.